Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Italy are through top of Group A. Wales will go with them. Will Switzerland? That's what's going to play out over the next couple of days on Off the Sport. And we'll be discussing that and so much more on today's episode of the Gangapod. Let's get into it.
And it's tucked in extremely well by Pessina.
Yeah, Group A is done. That group is done. We know Italy are through. Wales are with them. And to dissect it this morning, we've got... oh, I can say an all-star cast once again, but a cast of journalists. Nick Stoll, Jake Rosengarten, welcome back. So, Jake Rosengarten.
We got there in the end.
We got there.
That is how it's said, yes.
And a big welcome to the Gangapod today and to Daylight Hours to our Director of Sport and host, Richard Bayless. Good to see you, mate. Good to see you on the Gangapod once again.
Thank you, Dave. I feel like I should be wearing sunglasses inside at this point of the tournament, but we'll hold off for now.
Do you have any idea what you're doing at this hour?
Not really, but certainly enjoying it. That's for a start. It's been fantastic to this point. And now that the fixtures are happening side by side, simultaneous games, you get that sort of burst of energy because there's more games to look at, more screens. And I think, you sort of sense the end of the group stage. It's about to really ramp up too.
Now, Nick, you're fresh on the Gangapod scene the last couple of weeks. Rich has come back in today. Are we expecting him to be more of a David Alaba kind of repositioning or more of a Kieran Tierney kind of positioning? And be very careful with your answer.
No, I think very David Alaba, because he spreads himself in lots of different positions. He can play, he can play the host, he can play the guest, the EP role as well. So I'm looking forward to it. But it's also with, two of my bosses here, it's a little bit of a performance review
but
for
but
me.
But how about the rotations games from the gaffer Dave Wiener? He's really utilising that squad depth here, isn't he?
Well, at this point, you have to in a tournament. But chances are, if I'm the Alaba role, I'll be giving away a spot kick at some point.
that was
slightly mistimed it, I reckon.
That was a very loaded question and you tiptoed around it very nicely. So let's kick off with Italy 1, Wales 0. A game that didn't reach any particular heights, but Nick told us a lot about the squad depth of the Azzurri and the harmony and team spirit that Roberto Mancini has created in this really exciting squad.
Yeah, I mean, if anything, it was a 1-0 hammering. I think it was 23 shots to 3. It shows, they have so much depth. And we were talking about it yesterday, are they going to make rotations? And they did. They brought in lots of new players. Verratti got a lot of good minutes and looked really good. And now there's a question of, is he going to be playing in the round of 16? Because their midfield has looked fantastic without him. But it was a really another good performance from Italy. I'm feeling very good about my pre-tournament tip for them to win it. So it looks really good. But I thought it was some really cool moments. Mancini even sending on the goalkeeper, Sidigu, to get on. Apparently that is because in 1990 he was a player with Italy, but he didn't get on the pitch at all. And he wants everyone to have that moment, even 1 minute, to get on the pitch. So a nice little moment there for Sirigu.
That's that man management human touch that Mancini is really starting to bring to the fore with this side.
Absolutely. Well, he's played so many players across the journey. Now, 30 games now, three of them in this tournament without conceding. It was different to the first couple because it had to be, because there are 8 changes personnel-wise. But you can see that the system works. Everybody's on the same page. Young players coming in. You've got the Verratti question, but it's a great problem to have. I mean, if he comes in for anyone, it's probably the guy who most were expecting to be their talisman to a point in Nicola Barella before the tournament. But the fact he played 90, maybe he just knows that he won't bring him back in. But it almost doesn't matter, because the way they've played to this point, they're a team that just have so much harmony. You say it was a 1-0 hammering, and it absolutely was. But Gareth Bale's miss, I still don't know how he missed the opportunity he got. And when you look at it, and John Aloisi broke it down on the post-match show today on Euro Brekkie Wrap, it's a phenomenal set piece from Wales, and he's spurned a massive chance. They'll need to take those in the knockout stage if they're to do anything more.
I think he was almost the victim of Italy's dominance there. I don't think he could believe the chance that had been presented, because it just was so against the run of play. There was a moment, Jake, while you were on Turkey-Switzerland duties for the Optusport app on deadline duties, which we'll talk about a little bit later. I was watching this game, the Italy game, closely, and the moment for me that resonated, which I led with, was the celebrations to the opening goal and the camaraderie, the pile on after the goal as well, and at the same time as Locatelli embracing, I guess, a player in Pessina who arguably was auditioning for his position. I know clearly Locatelli's got runs on the board, but in theory, that's what it was. And then Mancini, the visual there, while they were celebrating, he was barking instructions to a couple of the senior players. Everything just looked in sync. It looked right. It looked like there was a really great buzz, and it's almost time to say, particularly given they're going to play either Austria or Ukraine, it might be time to believe the hype.
For sure. Well, I mean, the Azzurri have sort of been the star team of this group stage. I mean, I think that's unquestionable when you look across. I mean, they haven't conceded a single goal. Pretty remarkable. But
a thousand minutes now.
And first team to do that, win all three games and not concede a goal.
Absolute insanity. But I do agree with you, Dave. I think that the main thing that we've seen across this group stage, as impressive as the football has been, it's also been that just that feel-good factor around this squad. And I think that a lot of that comes from the sort of variety of clubs represented. It's not just the heavyweights this time around. This Italy squad, Roberto Mancini has sort of sampled around the Serie A, and there's a few different personalities, and your Locatelli and Berardi combination in that second game was obviously the big one. You got Insigne, you got Belotti around the squad. There's a whole lot of different clubs represented, and that's just sort of been representative of the sort of changing dynamics within Serie A itself.
Yeah, well, three players coming on and playing in this group stage from Sassuolo, which says a lot about their season, but also the fact that Mancini is rewarding players who can come through and perform like that at club level. It was interesting, again, to quote John, he said earlier this morning that he's been watching Italy since 1982 at every major tournament. This is the best Italy he's ever seen at a tournament. They won in 2006 the World Cup. They haven't won the Euros in that time, but they've been in finals, including Italia 90, where, you know, they were arguably the best team in that tournament. He says this is the best he's ever seen.
I was just going to say, you know, on the good vibes in the squad and that we're seeing in these celebrations, when they made their squad announcement and before the tournament and it was done in that kind of, you know, Australian Idol TV show thing, we all kind of took the piss out of them. But that was part of what Mancini's trying to build there, is this really positive, fun environment. You know, before they've talked about the national team being a concentration and they've had kind of, it's been a tough time for the players. The players are really enjoying it. I think we're seeing that kind of on the field.
It's done something to Paul Okon, Dave. Because if Mancini and
a Gagapod legend, by the way.
100%, or legend full stop. Roberto Mancini's former teammate, of course, at Lazio. That energy that Mancini's sort of trying to implement in that squad, it's happening to Paul.
The man management of Roberto Mancini is so good.
It's extending to the pundits.
Well, and this is the other thing. You can see it in the stands as well. And this is from a team that missed out in 2018 for the World Cup. And it was a disaster. It was a considered shameful.
Well, the darkest day, to use a...
Exactly. So, you know, it's amazing what Mancini has done to turn it around. But they asked him, you know, this you've equaled the record, 30 trophies. But he said, 30 trophies, 30 games unbeaten.
Maybe soon if they keep going like this.
Well, and then he goes, well, yeah, it's great that we'll get this record. But the focus is I want to be on the list of Italian coaches who've won a major trophy, a Euro or a World Cup. And that is the focus. So, you know, we could see, I don't think so, but we could see, we've seen it before. Teams play great in the group stage, get to the knockout stage and they're out.
Look, they haven't been hugely tested yet. Three poor teams. But the thing is, and I think now it's come up in a couple of episodes of the Gagapod, is the identity. What you do know about this Italy side is when they go into the next game, you know what? Their best 11 is going to be sport by depth, not by uncertainty. But when they step in, they're going to know what they're playing for, how they're playing, the tone that they're playing with, even the systems. And we saw today they've got a set piece, lick of paint to that as well. And to pick up on your point, Jake, as well, about the tone of the team, we don't watch Serie A day in, day out here. Obviously, Premier League is the bread and butter here at Opta Sport. But every time I watched Serie A, I was wildly entertained. And when you add the numbers up and the statistics up, it was an incredibly entertaining and kind of revitalized competition this year. And that has filtered down into the national team, clearly.
Oh, for sure. The thing that that you pick up on there, Dave, I think the two things, obviously, from here, we're just heading out of the group stage now. It's tournament football. I think, obviously, you look at identity is one of the big things, and I think there is no clearer team, more recognisable stylistically than Italy that we've seen so far. And then the other thing is character, and we haven't really seen them tested, as you say. I think obviously the other contenders, especially that Group F and those big teams in the likes of France and Portugal and Germany, have been tested by each other. I look to Belgium and the way that they were tested by Denmark and Kevin De Bruyne's impact. I'm very intrigued to see if Italy have that player when they're under the pump who will step up and change a game.
The only caveat to that is in both the first two games, they did have to, I mean, obviously you have to break a deadlock in every game, that goes without saying, but they did have to find something just to switch a gear a little bit and get out of the rhythm, and they did do that on both occasions.
But they went on with it, and that's the key thing. They finish games really well, and then they get to a game where they don't need to win it. They put almost everybody else in the squad in because they made five changes, did Mancini, during that game. So in terms of that fitness, they've got something that other teams in this tournament don't have, and the luxury of having rested key players heading into the knockout stage. So there probably aren't too many of the big guns that can say they're in as good a position, sort of fatigue and fitness-wise. Mm.
The only other thing I would bring up is the Rome factor. And that they've played all their games at home from here. And they've sort of been buoyed by that crowd at home. And you got, obviously, it's been spoken about a few times throughout this group stage, a fair few players who play their football at the Stadio Olimpico and feel very at home there. So it'll be interesting to see as they move away what happens there.
And they do go to London, it looks like, for the round 16 game against, as I said, Austria or Ukraine. Now, Rich, we exploited a very big loophole in our pre-tournament predictions. I think that both of us had Italy as dark horses. And so did Mark Schwarzer. And the technicality there is not an insult or our lack of knowledge of the history of world football, European football. It's that they were not at the last World Cup. I think we've played it beautifully.
They last won the Euros in 1968, Dave. So what history are you talking about? No, look, you're right. And my only justification was, well, they weren't at the last World Cup. They don't have the big star names pre-tournament. They probably will post. Mm. Yeah, even your Immobiles, Insignes, yeah, they're big in Europe, they're big in Italy, but they're not necessarily big globally. But hey, it's like saying they'll win the tournament and getting it right. If they win the tournament, we got it right, Dave. So, take it.
Honey, you're making two tips there, Rich. You're getting the system.
I will say it was better than tipping Turkey as your dark horse, which I did. So,
But you do keep reminding us that you backed Italy, though, repeatedly, I must say.
It's my only saving grace.
It could have been worse. It could have been Mark Milligan. He tipped Turkey to win the whole thing.
We have to say that he was focused on MacArthur's A-League finals, and that's why he didn't have enough research. And now that he's free of that, we're going to see him do much better tips from now on.
I did like Millsy's logic, which has been, it had been 18 months of completely, unexpected events everywhere, that there is going to be a twist in this tournament. So I think his theory was right, maybe the wrong execution.
And we've seen in the past, Denmark has won it, from not being qualified for the tournament, being a late entrant. Greece obviously won it in 2004, the great underdog story. Portugal in 2016, to me, that was another come-from-nowhere victory.
We don't yet know, because we need to see what happens over the remainder of match day three, but there's every chance that the most disappointing team in the tournament will be Turkey.
100%.
So, 100%. Nick, they've... whatever the opposite of graduate is, they've gone like this in your estimation on the podcast, from the dark horse to the translucent donkey to a 2D paper mache. What happens now that they're out?
Well, they're a fragment of my imagination. They're not even an actual physical force. I need like an astrophysicist to explain what this kind of, whether they're actually atoms of an actual thing. If they were a disaster, I'd say they are the catfish of the tournament. We were promised something, they did not deliver at all. We were promised a solid defensive side. They had, as John Aloisi said, one of the worst defenses in the competition. You could drive a bus through it. It was a disaster of a tournament for Turkey. And one thing you say, their coach is actually paid more than Roberto Mancini, and the Turkish media are letting him know.
Tell you what, we're going to get to that in just a few moments. To finish off this game, I'm loath to disagree with that Paolo Ocon or John Aloisi, who both suggested that Locatelli comes back in for Verratti, which is the big talking point from this. Would it have any of you seen enough to think that Mancini will keep Verratti in the 11, given he was such a big part of the talking points coming into the tournament?
It was interesting that he played 90 minutes, Verratti, because coming back from fitness, hasn't played since the semi-final of a Champions League, has had ongoing fitness concerns as well before that injury. You would have thought he might have pulled him off the field at some point. Whether or not that makes an impact, he knows that he's not going to start him, I'm not sure, but we were all kind of surprised when we watched that game that he did play 90. Personally, I'd be surprised if he brings him in for Locatelli. I think it might be Barella if he does bring him in at all.
Yeah, interesting stuff. Yeah.
I was just going to say, 136 touches, 103 accurate passes, 5 chances created. That's a really good 90 minutes. If you're auditioning for the side, that's a big, I need to be in there. So it's a selection headache, a good one to have. But yeah, I think he's going to try and work Verratti in there at some stage, and not for Locatelli, maybe for Barella.
That's choice. That's good choice. Wales, last word on Wales. We mentioned Bale's chance. Big chance. Ramsey obviously cashed in at one point, almost on a defensive error, but that was really the heights that they hit, guys. Their prospects going forward, they're still a solid side. They just didn't create a hell of a lot today.
You called them poor before, Dave. You said every other team in Group A was poor. You're backing down on that already.
Did I say they were poor?
You said every team was poor.
Oh, in terms of the test for Italy. Right, no, in terms of the test for Italy. They haven't been, well, they didn't test them today. I don't think they did test them today. I thought a team that made 8 changes was pretty comfortable for the duration.
Yeah, I put it this way. Carl Robinson, watching the game earlier on, he was a satisfied man because on paper, the most difficult game in the group stage wasn't a complete blowout. There are extenuating circumstances. It wasn't the number one Italy side, but they did what they had to do. And when they went down to 10 men, when Ethan Ampadu was sent off, straight red, somewhat controversially.
Yeah. Harsh?
It was harsh. Yeah. It might have been an orange card, potentially. Yeah. You can see why it's not a yellow, but you could see the look on the Welsh players' faces. It was harsh, but from that point, they defended pretty well without necessarily just putting everybody behind the ball. I don't think they're too bad. Whether or not they go any further in the tournament's another matter, though.
I think they'll be hard to beat. I think they're really competitive. I don't change my thought there that Italy with 8 changes were rather dominant. So we'll see what happens there. 2 teams that go through. Switzerland, what I mentioned, we don't know whether they will go through because they're in third and now they sit back and watch the cards fall over the rest of the week and the groups deciding where 4 third place sides go through. The best performing third place side. So Jake, you were watching this game closely, as I alluded to. What did you make of what you said was a really entertaining game?
Oh yeah, very, very entertaining. 42 shots in this game. That's the most ever in a group stage game at the Euros. And it was a fun one. It really was. I mean, Turkey, what can you say about them? As Nick alluded to earlier, just unquestionably the disappointment of the tournament for mine. They finish as statistically the 5th worst team in Euros history.
What does that mean?
So that means, so they ended with no points and a goal difference of -8. So 4 teams in history have finished with no points and -7, and 4 teams have done -8. So that's where they sit all time.
So no one's done worse than that?
No, that's statistically worse. So they're, as in those 4 teams who are 1 goal difference worse than them, and then right, and then them. But this morning, they just, look, they're the youngest squad in the entirety of the tournament.
True.
And I think that must be taken into account. And there's going to be a big future for this Turkey team, as Senol Gunes alluded to post-game. But he also was sorry.
Not a big future for him.
Although he's obviously a legend.
A big past, not a big future.
Yeah, he's a legend for what he achieved back in 2002. But I just, the naivety defensively, which is obviously such a shame because they were such a good tight defense heading into basically in qualifying. And today they just didn't put any pressure on the ball. And it was so easy to the point that in the 55th minute, even though the score was 2-0, the commentators on Optus Sport were saying if this were a boxing match, they'd be throwing in the towel.
And I'd just say as well, one thing kind of, obviously I tipped them as a dark horse and all that, but I was reading a bit today about Turkish football is in a bit of a shambles domestically, and maybe that's had an impact on the team. You know, we always kind of make fun of the Turkish Super League because, they bring those old Premier League players, they put them on big contracts and stuff like that. You see their lineups and there's players who were, great in the Premier League 5 years ago. That's actually caused quite a lot of problems in terms of their finances. A lot of the big 3 clubs are in debt. That's had some issues there. So, and obviously they've got the Erdogan situation. There's a lot of political, there's conspiracy theories going on in Turkey. Some teams are being favoured, some teams are not. It might have caused a bit of issues for a young team.
Hats off to Switzerland, though, because when you look at their side on paper, it is a really strong outfit. They've got the Mönchengladbach connection there. Jan Sommer's been really good in goal. And in this game, Shaqiri found space. And when Shaqiri finds space, he can do anything. We saw that today. He scored 2 great goals, 1 with the right, 1 with the left. And whilst the one with the right from outside the box will be the specky, the one from the left was unbelievable because the ball bobbled and he adjusted so quickly. Great finish. And you go back 5 years, he scored that overhead kick in, round of 16. He can do it on the big stage. And if he's given the opportunity, there's no reason why Switzerland can't go into the next round and actually go further and further again because they are quite solid. Steven Zubar with 3 assists. We know that Xhaka, if he decides to pass forward, can be effective as well. They've got a good enough team to go a lot further in.
Absolutely. And Shaqiri is one of 3 players to have scored in the 2014 World Cup, the Euro 2016, the 2018 World Cup, and now this Euro. Ronaldo, Perisic, Lukaku. So it's pretty good company to be in. He's one of those players who, he rehabs his own reputation every tournament.
It's a tournament player. It wouldn't be a Euros without a Shaqiri masterclass at some point for Switzerland. You mentioned those players. One player you didn't mention who up until, in match day one, was arguably the individual performance at that stage, Bree Embolo. I mentioned it was a journalistic smorgasbord on this episode of the Gagging Pod. We've got some insight from James McNicholas from The Athletic in the UK, who picked out Bree Embolo's performance in this game. And interestingly, Rich, compared him to the way Marcelo Bielsa uses a Leeds player.
Embolo put in a really interesting performance. He played ostensibly as a kind of a forward, as you would expect. But really, he was dropping deep into midfield, playing kind of a box-to-box role, playing short passes in there next to Freuler and Xhaka, and really sort of causing a distraction for the Turkish team. They didn't quite know what spaces he was going to pick up, and consequently, they found him difficult to handle. We saw against Wales how athletic, how dangerous he can be. But this was a really interesting tactical deployment, not unlike what Marcelo Bielsa's Leeds sides have done with Rodrigo, you know, someone who's ostensibly a number nine, dropping deep into midfield, taking up dangerous positions there. And I actually think it added some verticality to the Swiss game. You know, it gave them a power and athleticism in the middle of the pitch that in someone like Granit Xhaka, they don't necessarily have.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Yeah, Mbolo, impressive player, a bit of a joker in the pack for Switzerland, who are a team that, as you say, have pedigree, have a lot of quality. You don't normally associate them with glitz and glamour, flair football, but Mbolo has the ability to take the game by a scruff of the neck. What did you make of that reference to your team, Rich, Leeds United?
Well, it's an interesting one because Rodrigo never really got going across the season, but when you saw the flashes, a player that you would think is an out-and-out nine and for the national team has been that Rodrigo, but Bielsa looks at him and goes, no, that he's a 10, he can drop deeper, yet still be that really clinical goal scorer that you would expect. And Mbolo, you can see that. You can see that he's going to be around for a long time and he can give you a bit of everything. And that front three, I mean, Seferovic has obviously at times been, you know, somewhat criticised for the national team. He popped up with the opener in this one. But those front three, including Shaqiri, there's no reason when they rotate and they find those spaces, they can't be as damaging.
I want to talk about that front three, though, because Mbolo was impressive this morning. Obviously, it was a bit of the Shaqiri show at times. I think he had seven shots, created a bunch of chances as well. But going into this game, the likes of Seferovic and Shaqiri were being criticised enormously. People were wondering what they were doing in the 11, essentially, after the two games. And they both silenced those doubts in this game massively. I got to say, they were given a lot of space and a lot of time by Turkey, like afforded very much the freedom to do what they will. But they were good. And I got to say, Seferovic's strike was completely out of nothing. And to that point, Turkey had literally more shots in the opening 4 minutes than they managed in their entire opener against Italy. So they were looking good to start out with. Flew out of the gates, and then Seferovic went bang, and then Xhaka took control, and Switzerland flew from there.
Well, the lottery of the third place team is not only do you not know if you're going to get through, you also don't know who you're going to play. So there's a couple of paths they can take, and that makes it quite interesting. Do you guys like it? It's really interesting watching the UK press in particular talking about the 24-team format. You look at the lottery that it creates now, but it also, it's just kind of weird. I'm still getting used to it myself.
Everybody gets a prize at this tournament, except Turkey. Everybody gets a prize except Turkey. I've been doing a bit of research on old tournaments, you know, digging up some stuff for the Euro Brekkie Wrap, and it's a reminder when you look at, oh, that's right, that really good team finished third. The cutthroat nature of previous tournaments when there were only 16 teams, before that 12, before that 8. It's something that you need in tournaments. You need those big dogs to go home early. And the fact that there will be sides that go into the last 16 that we all look at and go, well, they're not that good, is actually kind of disappointing. I mean, the confusing aspect of it is kind of funny that nobody knows who's playing who where. That's fine. But it's hard to explain to people that aren't football followers. And it makes people just want to tune in almost from the round of 16 or quarterfinals onwards.
I was just going to say, it's a lot of games to be played to just eliminate 8 teams from 24. You know, you're going through a lot of games. It's the same with the Copa America. They're playing all these group games to eliminate 2 teams from the group stage. So, yeah, I don't love it. And I think you get the added kind of dynamic, the drama, when you have that kind of the third. You have to win your second game, basically, if you lose your first game, when only 2 teams get through. But, yeah, I think it's not great.
I do like the fact that coming to match day 3, you have the scenario situation where everyone's looking to see who has to do what, but it's a little bit of conflicted drama for the sake of it.
But it can also create a situation where teams both play knowing a draw's fine. And if Ukraine-Austria is not nil all tomorrow, I'll eat my hat. This is a podcast.
I do point out Rich is not currently wearing a hat.
That's right. Well, that's because I ate my last one. I do make fairly awful predictions. But on paper, you look at it. Remember France-Denmark in the World Cup 2018? I happened to be in the stadium for that. And Jim Proudfoot, the commentator in the UK, he was sitting just in front of me. He turned around to us probably 80 minutes in and said, I've never done this before in my life. I'm leaving. He wasn't commentating at the time.
Imagine though.
He was just watching the game. But everybody, the collective groans because once you realize two teams, they don't need a result. Why are we watching this? I'm not saying definitely that'll be the case with Ukraine-Austria, but it could be. Yeah. If they speak to each other and go, a point's enough, why would they play?
In Italy, they call it a biscotti, a little biscotti for everyone.
Which you could. And again, we want the next 4 days to be absolutely fabulous fare, but by the time you get to Group E and Group F, you might know the maths of what you need to get through as a third place team as well. So that's probably a little bit unfair as well. Although, as Tony Harper, one of our reporters doing the overnight for us, looked at, he said, imagine if they played all 12 Euro last day games at the same time. That would be madness. That would be madness.
Last day Premier League season vibes. Yeah, I think it's good. At the same time, you know, we had the game today with Switzerland-Turkey, which had the most shots in group stage history. So, you know, there's going to be some games which are just end-to-end basketball games, all transition, and there will be some games that are a little more on the France-Denmark.
And the last point of that for me is actually the old school Euros, which is actually where I really fell in love with, like, elite football. The difference it had to the World Cup where you're bringing the whole world together is the Euros was the World Cup's that party, the global showcase, but the Euros, that's another level. That's where the big guns come together and the big guns get eliminated early. So it does lose that kind of feel to it as well. But nevertheless, we're going to talk about the stakes going forward because that's what we're dealing with right now. And going into tomorrow's fixtures, where the Group B goes on the line, this one's intriguing because just like Denmark's coach and a lot of Denmark's fans, a lot of us here are thinking we are bewildered that the Danes are on 0 points. Obviously, they had to confront extraordinary circumstances in their first game when they went down 1-0. But against Belgium, they were elite in the first 45 minutes and didn't come away with a point because of Kevin De Bruyne's heroics. So 4:30 a.m. pre-game coverage on Tuesday morning, Australian Eastern Standard Time, into the simultaneous games at 5 a.m. Finland against Belgium, Russia against Denmark. What happens?
Oh, you would definitely say that Belgium is going to beat Finland, even with the rotations because of the depth that they have. But then it becomes Denmark. I think Denmark will beat Russia. I've actually been impressed with Denmark. I know they're on 0 points. They create a lot of chances. You know, they just need someone maybe better than Martin Braithwaite to finish them off. But I think Denmark will win. It could be we could see all teams equal on 3 points, and then it becomes a headache to do
get
all this maths.
Get the calculator and the abacus out and start moving the puzzle pieces around because it gets that tight. And if you're looking for the equations explained, I did take the calculator out yesterday afternoon for the Optusport app, and I do have the permutations and equations laid out if you want to have a look. I can't guarantee they make any sense, but they are there if you want to try have a crack.
The mad professor was firmly at work yesterday at Optusport. He was plugging away. I tell you, it's all done. The maths is all done. I've read it. It's perfect. But I think this could be an interesting morning. I mean, obviously this morning we only had a couple of games and it was the old no sleep fest here at Optusport, the old 2 a.m. kickoffs. But we got four games tomorrow and I agree. I think Denmark are so unlucky. They have looked great. They really, really have. And they've got quality everywhere. And I think as good as Russia have been at times, and they haven't been great, they sort of scraped by. I do think that they'll get the job done. And I think Belgium, I mean, again, you look at their squad, even though they somehow have Christian Benteke just lurking around their squad. I don't know how he's at the Euros, considering his Premier League form. But I think Belgium, no matter what team they put on the pitch, I think will get the job done here, surely.
Russia aren't great away from home. They'll set up probably with a back five. They'll be super negative because for them, a point will be enough. They traditionally aren't good somewhere where they need to go and get a result like that, so they'll shut up shop. Denmark have been good. Well, they were good, certainly, in the second game. Moment of the tournament, just about for me, was when Yusuf Poulsen scored so early against Belgium, and the crowd, the noise, the atmosphere there was something special. The Danes will create that again, you would think, with progression on the line for them. The question's going to be, with that lack of firepower up top, when they do create quite a bit through midfield, they don't have that striker, Braithwaite, Poulsen. Can they do the job? Damgaard's Youngs. Maybe they're not quite there yet. Can they break Russia down? I think that'll be the story of this game.
I'll just say, this is the official line from UEFA. If Denmark, Russia and Finland all finish on 3 points behind Belgium on 9, so that's Denmark to win tomorrow and Finland to lose, they will be split on goal difference from matches between those three teams. So disregard their results against Belgium. Again, calculators, abacus. Yeah. Let's work it all out.
So Denmark, in conclusion, Denmark can finish second, but we're going to have to be good at maths to work it out on the day.
We're going to need another crack team of reporters, Dave, to get to the bottom of this one.
In a nutshell, I do think Denmark will beat Russia. It'll be a tight, tight, tight affair, and Belgium should get the job done against Finland, and then we're up into the laps of the mathematical gods. After that, or sorry, before that, I should say, is the match you alluded to a bit earlier, Rich, which is...
We don't need to talk about it again. You know what I think about it.
Well, just to explain why that's the case, Netherlands are the only team that are officially top of the group coming into the final match day. So they've got the job done, and North Macedonia will be looking there to try get something special, a point from their maiden Euros campaign. Then it's Ukraine-Austria, where... Basically, but Austria to come second, this is the thing though, is Austria to guarantee themselves a passage need to win, because you look at, even we're talking about Denmark, if they finish with a win and finish third, I think there's going to be a team on 3 points that does miss out from third place.
Yeah, but Austria, if they get a point, they'll end up with 4 points. No team with 4 points is going to miss out realistically. It's still possible. I know Pythagoras, which is what you like to be called off air, Dave.
There's more angles to this than Pythagoras. I'm confused now.
Oh, absolutely. It can happen that they can draw. A team can finish on four and not go through. It's just super unlikely. Ukraine, though, and you know, I've been somewhat negative about this game. Ukraine's attacking players, yeah, they're great. I mean, Yaremchuk's going to get a big move at some point. You would think Yarmolenko's come out and said, I want out of West Ham. I want something new. Malinovsky's been somewhat disappointing. I'm still waiting for him to hit a long-range bomb because that's his thing for Atalanta. But they do have enough players to go and be dangerous to an Austrian side who, as we know, mentioned before, a little bit too reliant on David Alaba. But, you know, both teams, they're going to be happy with the point.
Just on Malinovsky, Danny Vukovic played with him at Genk in Belgium, and he said Malinovsky has the best shot he's ever seen. So that's what we're kind of looking for, one of those long-range 30-yard goals, and it might happen tomorrow.
I think Ukraine in fits and starts have shown some really good attack, and I think they will win against Austria tomorrow, and I think that will bring the sort of the third place lottery or bingo, whatever we're going to call it, back into life going through the next couple of days.
I'd love to see if Austria somehow get knocked out tomorrow or in the coming days. I'd love to see what David Alaba says about the coach when it's done. He's been stuck back there in the centre of defence, clearly the most technically gifted player that Austria have, the best player they've probably ever had, and he's kind of being wasted out there. He said, sort of hinted that he's not really happy playing that position. I think if they get knocked out and the coach falls on his sword, which he surely will, provided they don't get through, Alaba could go off.
It'd be like us playing Richard Bayless on mute, which I'm just going to do now and roll it down for the next 10 minutes.
But I just say on David Alaba, one of the things I really liked finding out about in this tournament is that his mum is a Filipino beauty queen and his dad is a literal Nigerian prince who also doubles as a DJ.
Sorry, what is a literal prince?
Like, you know, not the one that sends you an email that asking for money. Like an actual, like legitimately part of the Nigerian royal family. His dad is part of it. David Alaba comes from that royal thing. So maybe that's, you know, where he gets maybe that confidence, let's say.
Yeah. Also shows a bit of everything. He can play in any position. He can do anything he wants.
And I've got no follow-up to that fact.
I just wanted to point out that Nigerian prince / DJ is probably the greatest resume I have ever heard in my life.
That's right. I want to see it on LinkedIn. Let's
gents, it's been good fun as ever. And for anyone just wondering how the rest of the week plays out, on Wednesday you've got the Czech Republic, England, Croatia, Scotland group, where Czech Republic play England, Croatia play Scotland. That is the breakfast game, the 5 a.m. game with coverage starting from 4:30 a.m. Eastern. And then Thursday is a massive one because it's those two groups we spoke about on yesterday's Gegenpod, Group E and Group F, Slovakia play Spain, Sweden play Poland, and in Group F, of course, Portugal play France and Germany play Hungary. They are back to back on Thursday morning. We can't wait for that, but we'll preview that in due course on the Gagger. But just before we wrap up, Rich, obviously we haven't had you on the podcast so far, but it's been what a week of just 24-hour day rolling Euros coverage. How have you enjoyed it? And talk about just to give our listeners an insight just to how insane and intense this competition has been for us at Optus Sport, with just how much we've thrown into it to bring the coverage to it to the viewers, listeners and readers.
Well, it's been intense, but it's probably been intense for months and maybe a couple of years as well after the false start in 2020. I forgot what year we're talking about. Like, to get ready to this point, because of course what happens in Europe is different to what happens in the studio. And once you've got digital, social, live, linear, whatever it is, everything all combined, it's a, you know, a lot of moving parts at any one time. So it is a 24-hour operation. We're on air at silly times, and people out there watching that we appreciate them having, you know, us on their screens at whatever time of night. There is a daytime operation to it as well because of the European side. I mean, we've got three or four crews over there at any one point. Paul Ocon, we mentioned before, is, you know, making pasta and pizza.
But someone's got to send him to make pasta and pizza.
Well, I mean, he needs to stay fed, and it's nice of him to put it on camera. But we've got Max Merrill doing surfing and Oktoberfest and all this stuff. Guys in Glasgow, guys in London, Ollie Gill just not sleeping for weeks. There's a lot that goes into it. So whilst we're tired and the viewers are tired, I know the people that are around Europe are putting in big, big shifts. Adriano Del Monte's been everywhere. I'm starting to see, he's not cracking, is it? He's a marathon man, but he's starting to just mention, oh, yeah, pretty tired. Come on, mate, you can get through it. So, you know, I think it has been a lot of fun. I think it's been a good tournament. It's always nice when the group stage is exciting because you know that the best is yet to come. And the effort and the energy you're trying to look for is worth finding, because when you have football of that quality, it'll always be good fun. I think everyone's having a good time. Hopefully the viewers are enjoying the matches and the way we're doing it as well. And of course, you guys on the pod also doing a great job.
Thank you. Trying our very best to just keep everyone. And what I love about it is we're covering the punters and the fans from every angle. If you don't have time, if unfortunately like us, you don't have the time to sit there and watch 12 hours of football because you've actually got a real job, you can listen about it, you can watch the mini matches, highlights, read about it, take your snippets of it, whatever it may be. So it's fantastic stuff. And the best part is it's simmering and to the really nice climax over the next couple of weeks.
The serious business is about to begin.
Well, the only serious business, by the way, I was going to say, a group of pundits working on this thing, they're all just obsessed with their predictor. The predictions league we've got at Optusport, there's about 250 people in it. Neve Owens has been top for the last couple of days, and she's the most smug person around. So you've got everybody off air just, what did Neve pick? What's Neve doing? Oh, I got that one wrong. Oh, I got that one wrong. Oh. And no one's focusing on the games. It's all this predictor league at the moment.
If anyone thinks anything here is contrived, like when Thomas Sorensen was right in the end of, I can't remember a game, but it was coming down to goal difference, and the cameras were on live, he didn't know. If anyone thinks that was contrived, it absolutely was. No. And he was riding every second of it, and our very smart producer was like, let's get the camera rolling here and make sure we get every bit of emotion from it. So we never lose that joy here at Optusport. Gents, thanks so much for your time today. A quieter day, but just a calm before the storm of a couple of big days ahead. Nick, Rich, Jake, thanks so much, and we'll see you soon.
Absolutely, looking forward to it.
Thanks, Dave.
Good stuff. And to everyone out there, as ever, or as I say, more than ever at the moment, until the next episode of the Gagging Pod, enjoy your football.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.